The dollar rises as the pound falls. How that's good and bad for America. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio. Right now, just $1.29 will get you your very own British pound. Today, we've seen Britain's currency hit lows not seen in decades as investors worry about the impact of the UK's vote to leave the European Union. Flip side of that is a strong dollar, which has a mixed impact on America's economy. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace joins us to talk about that. Good morning, Lewis.
Good morning.
So first, let's talk a little bit about what's driving down the pound.
Well, things are feeling really shaky over in the UK. International investors in British real estate and in British everything have cold feet. There's a scramble to get out of those investments as they are losing value quickly. Investors are piling into so-called safe haven assets like gold and even the Japanese yen.
And of course, U.S. Treasuries. And remind us again, why is the strong dollar such a mixed blessing for America's economy?
Right. So who cares about a strong dollar unless I'm going to England for vacation? Well, the first reason it might matter to us here is that a lot of stuff is effectively cheaper, anything imported from toilet brushes to cars. But not everyone's happy about it. Manufacturers, really anyone whose business depends a lot on exports, are going to find that what they're selling looks pretty expensive to people abroad. One way they might respond is by making new investments overseas or pursuing new merger and acquisition deals. Another area that can suffer is any part of the economy that depends on international tourism. People overseas might be a little less likely to blow their savings on an expensive trip to Disneyland or Vegas.
Yeah, a big factor here in New York, too. Now, later today, we get Fed minutes and a little new insight into what the Fed's been thinking, at least before the Brexit vote. How does the dollar and its strength play into what they're thinking as far as monetary policy?
Yeah, so our central bankers are watching this closely. Not to get too lost in the weeds, but for them, a strong dollar means potentially weak inflation. The Fed wants to see inflation get to right around 2%, and it's been below that.
Okay, Marketplace's Lewis Wallace. Thanks. You've probably seen TV ads for the University of Phoenix. It is a for-profit college owned by a company called Apollo Education Group, which reports its quarterly earnings tomorrow. But that quarterly report to shareholders is something the company hopes to avoid in the future. It's awaiting approval for a billion-dollar deal to sell itself to a group of private equity investors. Marketplace's Amy Scott explains what that means for the controversial world of for-profit learning.
For years, the University of Phoenix has seen its enrollment and its parent company's stock price tumble as it's faced scrutiny for high prices, low graduation rates, and aggressive recruiting. Analyst Michael Tarkin with Compass Point says the upside of going private, less focus on short-term results.
I think being private will allow them to sort of be able to set up a path that can get them back on track.
But it also means the public won't have as much information about things like lawsuits against the company. Robert Shireman once led the Obama administration's crackdown on for-profit colleges.
The danger really here is that the University of Phoenix lulls us into believing that they've fixed everything, goes public again, and then we have a repeat of the problems that we've seen in the past.
The deal still has to be approved by the Education Department. If it is, another Obama appointee stands to benefit, former Deputy Education Secretary Tony Miller, who co-founded one of the private equity firms trying to buy the company, is expected to become its chairman. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
China is home to the world's largest network of highways. More and more young Chinese are using these roads to hitch a ride. During a recent reporting trip, Marketplace China correspondent Rob Schmitz picked up a couple hitchhikers exploring China's mountainous southwest. He sent us this reporter's notebook.
Lu Cheng and Ye Tong, two friends, had been hitchhiking for a couple of weeks. 36-year-old Ye Tong worked in a Japanese trading firm in the eastern city of Tianjin.
Every morning, I'd punch in, write some plans and reports, and communicate with clients. Same thing every day.
She had had enough. She called her 25-year-old teacher friend, Lu Cheng, and both of them quit their jobs just like that and hit the road. Lu says urban life in China sometimes seems meaningless.
You're supposed to buy a house at this age. You must marry at that age. Some people we've met in small villages out here don't have these pressures, but they're very happy.
Lu says the source of this pressure is always the same.
Our parents tell us, if you don't make money now, what will you do in the future? If you don't have a child now, maybe you will never have children. There's too much pressure from our parents.
So the two have pooled their savings for bright-colored parkas and backpacks, and they're hitchhiking the mountains of Tibet. They're not free from worry, though. Ye has a nasty gash on her hand from a hiking accident, and she's worried because no job means no health insurance. And Lu's friends from home are constantly asking her over social media when she's coming home.
My friends say I'm crazy. They ask, why are you doing this? I say, because it's interesting. Then they ask, yeah, but what's the purpose? Then I say, there really isn't a purpose. It's just a beautiful way to live. Then they ask, what exactly is so special about it? Then I say, well, there isn't anything that's really special about this. Then they ask, then why do you do it? And I don't know how to answer.
The same exasperated friends texting her from cubicles in office parks throughout China wonder why Lu doesn't have a plan. They've got plans. China has plans. Why doesn't she? The question makes her tired, and she always has the same answer. My plan is to have no plan. On the road in the mountains of southwest China, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And finally, it's the end of the line for a device that ushered in the smartphone era. BlackBerry says it will stop making what it calls the classic, the last phone with its traditional physical keyboard. Smartphones have gone toward touchscreen keyboards, but many fans really love punching those adorable little keys of the BlackBerry, and they stayed loyal even as other phones became popular. BlackBerry's devices once defined the category we now call smartphones, but Apple and Android phones came to dominate as BlackBerry struggled in recent years. In a nod to keyboard lovers, BlackBerry's COO said, quote, sometimes it can be very tough to let go. Doing so makes way for new and better experiences. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.